Good morning. This is the Healthcare Consultants Podcast, brought to you by the Chicago Health Law and Professional Licensing Firm of Michael Vifavia and Associates. Today, our guest is Rex Plowman, dental practice broker at DDS Match in Chicago. This podcast is about navigating the world of dental practice buying, selling, and success. Join us as we dive into the strategies, tips, and industry trends that dental practice brokers, owners, and aspiring dentists need to know. Our guest again is Rex Plowman from DDS Match in Chicago. Good morning, Rex.
Good morning, Nick. How are you today?
I am well and ready to learn all about buying and selling dental practices, as I have some friends of mine I went to school with growing up who are dentists, and I've seen them go from one practice to all of a sudden they have three, and then five, and then 50. There's a lot to unpack
So. No, it's quite amazing that the trends we've seen in dentistry in, geez, let's call it the last 20 years with consolidation and some tremendous growth strategies out there.
Yeah. Well, I think that there's a lot of people who may be a little bit leery about things that seem too good, too easy, too quick. And a lot of the dental service organizations, that's a new thing. And I can understand why people are curious and want to have more information about that and all the other hot issues. So, let's just get started. Tell us a little bit about how you got into this area of business and why you love it so much.
Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah, again, I'm Rex Plowman with DDS Match in Chicagoland here, and I've been a longtime dental guy. I got to blame that on my father. He got me into the industry back when I was in high school on the distribution side of the business, and I carried that forward in a pretty serious manner for the next 25 years or so, let's call it. Working for a major distributor in dentistry throughout the Midwest. I held some leadership roles, managing a couple sales branches for that distributor for, 18 to 20 years. That's what brought me to Chicagoland, Nick, about 17 years ago. And so I managed that facility for the company Patterson Dental for about a dozen years. And then I had the opportunity to make a change, and that's when I latched onto the brand DDS Match, and a friend of mine had started that brand when he had left that distributor probably a dozen years before me or so, and I realized in having some great discussions with that franchisor of DDS Match that it was a great opportunity for me to get involved in some different aspects of dentistry and use all my knowledge and experience that I gained over the years and put it to some good use in a different manner, and that's in supporting dental practice owners for the transition of their dental practices.
Very good. All right.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about what happened. I know that COVID was this thing that definitely affected a lot of things for a lot of folks, and I see ads all the time for a dentist office near me who are saying, we know that you haven't been in a while. Please come in again. Like, get back on track with your dental health. What have you seen as far as the business side of things with the impact of people not being able to get regular dental care?
Yeah, you know, thankfully, I think we're back to normalcy for the most part, and hopefully the worst of the COVID-type scenarios are beyond us. Thankfully, dentistry is just so strong, you know, no matter what's been put in front of it in the past as far as influencers in the economics. You know, we always rebound. Dentistry always rebounds pretty darn quick and is noted as being probably the fastest to recover out of tough times. So it certainly showed that as well. Dentistry did in bouncing back inside the dental practices to get revenues back to where they were, welcome back in those patients in a somewhat, you know, traditional manner. Maybe a little more PPE was involved. But as COVID came on, and obviously we hadn't dealt with a pandemic in any of our lifespans, and that certainly took us by surprise, the having to shut down and cease operations, find different protective needs and PPE to take care of the patients and the staff and really get the worries out of the way to get back to normal dental care. You know, we saw practices drop by up to 50% in traditional collections. And then, thankfully, after years gone by, probably since we were into COVID, we see those practices come back. And most practices, after about a year's time, were back to their normal level of care. I think it was about 80% I saw in some ADA guides out there. So, again, dentistry just kind of proved that it was back. But it moved a lot of people out of the industry, I'd have to say, Nick. I don't want to forget about that. You know, we saw the disposition of a lot of employees that didn't return because, you know, either they were too close to retirement and they said, just heck with it, or they were scared by, you know, the infectious diseases around them in the dental practice, and this really, really brought awareness to that, COVID did. So those are just some thoughts as to how we see things coming and going. And, of course, we're looking at the baby boomers now, who are the biggest segments of our society as far as population goes. And those folks are at the time now to really consider retirement. So we're seeing a lot of transitioning of businesses, big and small, plenty of consolidation, and plenty of new private buyers out there that are jumping into their first practice ownership opportunities.
Very good. Yeah, I keep thinking about the impact on business with the pandemic and closed shutdowns and everything, because, you know, what their book of business was from 2019 might look very different from 21, 22. And it's like, well, how long does that come back to demonstrate, you know, now we're back as strong as we were before, you know, or are we looking at lagging revenues? So I guess I wondered if that was an area where people could negotiate on price and different things. And just, I just wonder, you know, how much negotiation does go on for things like that. For those of us who've never bought a business before, in some aspects, it's as easy as finding a business listed for sale, having the financing, and securing and buying like a car or anything, or a house. But there's also, there's a lot more to it.
Yeah, definitely. And you're talking about the valuation of dental practices now. And as COVID came on, you know, practices were generally shut down a minimum of 2 months, some up to 4 to 6 months, depending on how the owner handled things. And hopefully, if we were valuing a business after that, really any business that might have been affected by COVID, hopefully 2020 was taken as sort of a blip on the radar and we could just kind of wash it away. And that would only be if we really recovered from any dip we had in revenues or collections in 2020 due to the pandemic. If we did recover, we could say, okay, 2020 really doesn't kind of count for valuing this business. We've never been through a pandemic before, and we've shown that we're now back to traditional numbers as far as production, profitability, collections go. And so now we were looking at 19, maybe skipping 20, having it there to look through to see that, okay, yeah, we did take a dive, but we bounced back, and now we're looking at 2021's numbers, 22's numbers. And that's a proper valuation for the business for those 3 years to be utilized. But there's plenty of influence outside of COVID with, you know, valuing a business. You know, we could talk about location and how critical that is, the demographics inside and outside of the practice, the state of the equipment in the practice. Is it standard of care? Are they a little behind? Are they right on the cutting edge? All those things influence the value of a dental practice, certainly.
Oh, there's so much. And we've had, and it's a great thing to have this program sponsored by Michael V. Favia and Associates, who runs the Health Practice Advisory Group. And we've had people on this program talk about specifically the real estate that goes into dental and finding that property. Different for different neighborhoods, different demographics, what you need, what the customers and the patients want and desire. That's very specific and drilled down. And I think about that. I also think about when we talk about the impact of COVID and the pandemic, how a lot of people have looked at their business models and looked at scalable profitability and things where, you know, we see a lot of hybrid workforce models and people working from home, coming back in, and we see some companies trying to get everyone to come back into the office. And my point being that people have sort of nailed down, how do we make money, where do we make money, and what's our most, you know, what are our profitability tools and things? And I just wonder, you know, what tech, I find that technology seems to be the thing that separates those who are more competitive from the rest of the crowd. And looking at profitability, what are some latest and greatest that you'd like to share with us?
Yeah, no, great stuff here, Nick. I appreciate it. Most definitely there seems to be a correlation between the businesses that possess some of the latest technologies and put them to good use as well. Sometimes that's the most difficult piece, is integrating these new technologies into the business effectively. But those that do, we certainly see higher production, higher collection numbers, maybe just a better overall appeal into the business, whether it be just the decor or seeing that nice shiny object over there that the dentist is going to utilize to take care of me a little differently, maybe take me out of pain quicker, maybe eliminate some pain in the process. But certainly we see that, you know, technology is a big influence on valuing a business, in selling a business. You know, you think about a young buyer, and maybe they're not so young, really. I mean, these folks we're dealing with coming out of dental school, they're generally, you know, we're talking 26 to 30 years old, and then they're working as an associate for a couple of years, and then they decide, I want to be an owner. And there's so many good reasons to be an owner, but what they're thinking about is they're looking for a practice to own for the first time as they take that big risk. Is they're looking for some of those great tools that they've been utilizing in the practice where they've been working. Maybe it's a digital scanner. Maybe it's cone beam, the 3D x-ray units that allow for greater precision and accuracy in some advanced restorative procedures, or in just the discovery of some opportunities to take care of patients. They're looking for those tools so that they can be right at home again in their right. New practice. They've got those tools that they've been utilizing. If they see that those tools aren't there, it's sort of a knock on the business. And maybe they'll just walk away and say, you know, I know it's in a great location. I know the doctor's a good person. Looks like they've built some great loyalty with their patients. But, boy, I've got to put a lot into this practice, and I'm really not up to that task. And I don't want to put in that extra investment. So it's definitely an influence on the business.
There's definitely an expectation I find with consumers, and I know the place that I go to is called Mint Dentistry, and that is a big thing here in the Dallas area, and they have many offices, and they have a great ad campaign. They also have a co-op program where those who are cash pay and have to get services done that exceed their budget at the moment can get on a $5 or $15 a month co-op plan, and somehow the rest of the stuff is all covered, and you just keep paying your $5 into the plan every month. It's like their own internal insurance policy. And then other people start expecting that, and people say, well, they have that at this place, they don't have it at the other place. And if from what I have seen, it really does appear like healthcare and dental care particularly has advanced so much from, I mean, I'm in my 40s, you know, come when I was a kid to now. Like, dentist was a lot more scary back when I was little. It's not so scary now. And, you know, they have, like, wonderful TVs, and they give you some headphones, and, you know, what would you like to watch on TV or listen to? Like, it's a much better and more pleasant experience, and the things that they can do with tooth repair, fixing chips, this and that, you know, what used to be a lot more in depth seems to be a lot easier. So that's a good thing. Let's move on to talking about lawyers. We always love to talk about lawyers, you know, when we need them. And so when we're buying these dental practices, there's a lot to look at, you know, different employment agreements people might have, because there may be, you know, when we talk about buying a dental practice, how many employees do we have? You know, there could be a lot going on there, and that's where Mike Favia comes in. So can you talk about what those considerations are, and do attorneys get involved in the review of certain transactions and sales beforehand, or how does that usually – what's the normal course that arises?
Yeah, sure, Nick. Thank you. Yeah, when it comes to legal considerations in the transition of a dental practice ownership situation, we definitely need to get attorneys involved. But when do you get attorneys involved? And I certainly enjoy working with Michael Favia. He's a fantastic lawyer in this area, great experience in healthcare. And that's what I recommend to folks, is you sort of have to build a team, whether you're on the buy side or the sell side. You really need some people that you can trust and turn to that know what they're doing when it comes to the transition of a dental practice. And thankfully, there's a bunch of attorneys around the globe here that focus on dentistry and serving dental practices. So I definitely, agree and would recommend that you get the attorney involved when, you know, not in the very beginning, but when you're selling your practice and now a letter of intent is being served by the buyer to the seller, and you agree upon those terms in that letter of intent, and that's when I would really have the attorney step in at that point. I don't think you need to do so with a simple LOI, as we call it, letter of intent again. I don't think with a simple one, you really need to get the attorneys involved. I think it's really good to sort of get the price consideration for the practice out of the way, have some terms with the transition between the buyer and seller spelled out, maybe the price allocation for tax purposes is clear, and some other different pieces there that are important in the transaction, such as assets to be sold, assets to be excluded. And once you come to those terms, and maybe it's also the compensation component too for the seller, as maybe he's going to become or she's going to become an associate to the buyer. You have some of those basic terms of compensation spelled out. You sign off on that letter of intent, and then you turn it over to the attorneys for both parties. And now they'll go to work for the purchase documents, an independent contract, maybe a service agreement that could be involved in the transaction, and all the other documents that get passed and forth, bringing the folks to a closing for the transition of the ownership of the practice.
Yeah,
I was just going to add, Nick, you know, you might need that attorney later down the road as well. God forbid something comes up here where you need to go back to them after the transition is closed, but you'd want to keep that relationship going with the attorneys as well.
The one thing I was going to throw in there was the concept of name changes, and this is just coming from the marketing and lawyer side of the equation. So often the intellectual property attorneys are the rain cloud who show up. I know an attorney friend of mine who works for a firm where they work with mergers and acquisitions of major companies, and their job as patent lawyers is to do research and find out if there's any poison pills, or they're buying a company that's got any liability with their intellectual property. And so when I think about dental practices, I think of name changes and, you know, how many times I've seen someone, you know, want to change the name of a business and then they end up on the other side of litigation because they've chosen a name that's already used in commerce and all that. So, but the name of a business, that goes into the goodwill of all the patients. And if your book of business says, I've got X amount of people coming here every year, it's because they know the name of the place and they probably don't. I would guess that many people go to the place because they have it's convenient. They take their insurance. They like their procedures for scheduling. They get a text reminder. It's little things like that, honestly, that I believe people make the choice of why they stay in places. And I don't know at the end of the day that they really are ultimately concerned with who owns the practice, you know, or whether, you know, I mean, people like their dentist, but, you know, they understand the dentist retires. I don't know that it would make such a big difference to people, but a name change, I would think, would be a problematic thing. What happens when that comes up?
Yeah, that's interesting you bring that up there, Nick. I'm actually going through that right now with a transaction. In this case, a doctor is selling one of two practices that he owns, and they both have the same name, and they both utilize the same website. So what's going to happen between the buyer and seller here with those components that you were just discussing? In this case, it's about the whole internet piece, the website, SEO management dollars. Are they going to share the website? Is the seller going to just sell the website to the buyer, or is the buyer going to rent their space on the website over the years? That's probably where we're going to land on this one. But we've certainly seen a little more sensitivity around the names used for the practices out there. It used to be a given that, you know, you were going to name your practice your name, you know, Henry Jones DDS. And now we're seeing a lot more folks opening up practices, and they're thinking ahead a little bit better strategically. And now it's Happy Tooth, you know, instead of Henry Jones DDS, or it's Modern Dentistry Palace, or or right. whatever the name might be, because it's a lot easier to transact those assets in the transition of the practice ownership. So that is a big component, an important component. Who owns those assets after the sale?
Makes a lot of sense. You know, one of the things that there's a tendency to approach this from such a transactional aspect, and that's what we expect and need from our professionals in transition, whether it be you as a broker, Mike Fabia as a lawyer, or anyone else involved in the process. But we have to somehow put the brakes on and remember that there are people who sacrificed a lot of their time to build these practices. There are dentists who didn't go on vacations. There are dentists who paid their staff and overhead and sometimes paid themselves less. I mean, there's a lot, and they've gone out of their way to make themselves a family practice, a place that people were comfortable and they know, and they went for generations. And, you know, all of a sudden it seems like all of these, you know, corporate chain type dentist offices keep popping up, and I have a guess that many senior dental practitioners would say, well, that's fine and that's good, but my place is my place because this and that. So how do you preserve the blood, sweat, and tears? Because, you know, it's like if I'm selling a vehicle that I really love and have taken really care of, you know, and then someone pops up and they say, well, I'm going to give it to my kid who's going to go to college, and I'm like, no, they're going to ruin my car. And it is so how do you approach people with those concerns and sensitivities towards their own particular brand and style of practice, ensuring that the new people aren't going to affect that, so to speak?
Yeah, it's tough. And I'll say this, Nick, you know, you can't promise what's going to happen in the hands of the new owner. You know, that's just the reality. We don't know what's going to really transpire after the closing of the transaction, but we want to preserve what is most important to the seller in the transition of the practice. And oftentimes when I'm talking to a potential seller, they'll tell me that the most important piece is to get the most money for the value of the practice. And then very quickly it becomes, but what's also really important to me is my staff and my patients and what I've built here. And I don't want to see it all just fall apart. And so it might take second fiddle to the price for the practice, preserving that legacy that they've built. But I see very often as the transactions are moving along, as we're going down the road to closing with a buyer, and we think we found a good buyer and a great match here for our seller's plans and dreams and the future of the practice. And, you know, very quickly, I'll also see that we move from price to preserving legacy as being the most important. And so oftentimes what could be perceived as, hey, it's just all about the money becomes, no, it's all about the asset and the people and what we've built here over time and seeing that carry on, which is fantastic to really see from my perspective in the business. We do our best to really follow the scope of what our sellers want to see happen with the business and the people involved in the business as we look for buyers, and we'll do our darndest to try and preserve that, but we also can't guarantee what's going to happen down the road.
Right. Let's talk a little bit about the concept of dental service organizations and the DSOs. I know most dentists who would be listening to this program are quite aware of how those all work. But there are also people who may run into this information who are looking to invest in different things, and it could be an individual investor. Sometimes trustees invest on behalf of a trust into a business. There's all sorts of different things. So what are just the basics of the dental service organizations where, you know, who can be involved? I know that not everyone needs to be a licensed practicing dentist. So are they for those who may not really have heard of that before? And just what are the basics of what those are and how those work?
Yeah. We call them those DSOs, right? The Dental Service Organization. And they have spiraled into the business here, the business of dentistry in the last, let's call it 20 years, and certainly picked up steam over the years here. And how they come about. So picture a dental practice owner who's got a really good strategic mind, a good business mindset, and they start thinking about expanding their practice. And now they go out and they acquire their friend's practice down the road. And then a couple years later, they go out and they buy another practice in another corner of the community, 10, 15 miles away from the other established two practices. And then they carry on forward with buying practices over time, and they get to maybe five practices, maybe six practices. And what they could find is that the banks are going to dry up for them for future growth. And the banks just don't want to expose any more dollars to this one lender who's going out and acquiring practices. And so they'll sort of hit a roadblock, this practice owner and small group, and they won't be able to carry forward with maybe some investment they need to make internally or externally in acquiring more businesses. And so they'll have to turn to investors to help them to move forward from that point. And that's where a lot of practices stop, because they don't realize this angle or this roadblock that's going to be coming with the financial part of the business, excuse me. And so those that get capped out, they remain at three practices, maybe five practices. They're not willing to take the next leap, which is pretty risky, looking for outside investors. And those that will then have an influence on the decision-making of your business as well. So once the private equity or investors get involved, Nick, they're going to want some power there. They're going to want some decision-making abilities. And so that's where the private equity comes in. The private equity comes in, kind of rescues this practice owner of five, six practices, let's say. And now they're going to bring in their own people to manage the business, maybe on the clinical side as well, certainly on the back side of the business with all the administrative and human resources, accounting, et cetera. And now they're going to have a seat at the table with you. And they might even have decision-making power, but that's where that DSO starts to erupt in the space, is when we really bring in outside investors.
Yeah, I'm like, see item number five or six we had on having a good lawyer when the disagreements pop up, you know. And just something is this, what happens when those individuals you are talking about who are want a seat at the table, what happens when two of them happen to be husband and wife and now they're getting a divorce? Boom, that's an interesting wrinkle in all of our stuff. And what happens when they're getting a divorce and it's right before we're about to close on our thing? So it's, you know, just like buying a house,
there's
real estate, there's
complexities,
so many things can happen.
Yeah. Oh, you just never know.
With a couple minutes left, tell us any success stories that stick out in your head or happy moments that make you say, I'm glad that I do this line of work.
Oh, yeah. I appreciate that. You know, sometimes selling a specialty practice is rather difficult. There's not as many buyer targets out there. And then you throw into the nuances of that particular practice that you're trying to sell. And just recently, we're at the one-year mark, maybe 15-month mark with this seller trying to find the right buyer for them up in a suburb here on the north side of Chicago. And the clock is kind of ticking here, because you might have a staff member that's looking to retire as well with you, and they're kind of looking at their watch and their calendar, and they're looking at the owner going, hey, I was going to stick around with you here until you sell, but hey, when are you going to sell this thing? You know, and then there's the landlord and a lease term that's coming due. And so those were the scenarios I ran into with this specialty practice being sold, and fortunately, within a month of that lease coming due, and the employee's been looking at them funny for 6 months now about retiring themselves, we found the right buyer, and they turned out to be friends. Something had happened with this buyer in the partnership they were a part of, and it was just a great circumstance that kind of happened at the ninth inning, and we were able to get that transaction completed, and my seller was so appreciative. The buyer was so excited because they were actually going to be working closer to home, and it was the perfect practice for them. And so it was just nice to see. It was a win-win for everybody, and we got it done really in the last at-bat.
There you go. I'm just I'm thinking about the laughing gas they used to give us at dentist. I'm like, did they give that when you're going through, like, the buying and selling process? I would need the gas.
Oh, yeah, you never know what's going to happen. You know, I don't want to get into horror stories, but there's some ugly ones out there that occur and take everybody by surprise. And,
sure.
And usually it's not with malice. You know, it's just a circumstance that somebody can't live with and they turn around, you know. But, yeah, there's lots of different scenarios and many different ways to try and handle it. And lots of people that are in that stew, you know, with attorneys.
Well, like real estate, what's the equivalent? Is there equivalent of a title company that insures against the things that can arise?
Yeah, there's a little bit of that. And we're certainly trying to mitigate the risk moving forward for both parties in those purchase documents that Mr. Mm-hmm. Favia is always a part of, you know.
Right.
Yeah. Yep. Certainly.
There's a lot there. Well, I hope that, like I said, there's so many new. I see a lot of new dental practices and different groups, and they offer neat things. And you know, they make it where the dentist doesn't have to be a scary place to go. You know, you can still. They have my place. They give you a cool shades, and there's like a step and repeat, and they take a picture, and it's like. There's so much hype about it, and they have the big billboards that said, I make sexy teeth, and it's Dr. whatever Mint Harrison is the guy's name, and Mint Dentistry here in Dallas. Like, and to be honest, I wouldn't be surprised if they're not only in this area that you know, things like that will pop up in other states and other places, you know. And
you
know, so it's like, be innovative, you know, think about, I always say, imagine the business being exactly how you want it to be and solving all the problems that you ever conceived of. And there is a way to make that happen. You just have to know the right people to ask those right questions. And that's why I really like Favian Associates and the Health Practice Advisors group that you're in as well. And because that's just a round table of people with highly specialized knowledge and skill in anything in the healthcare industry, not only dentistry, but, you know, everything else under the sun. If you can think about the purchase or the, not purchase and sale, but the, you know, the medical services, healthcare services generally, it's all there under one umbrella. So do be in touch with Michael V. Favian Associates. They're number 312-609-6666. They've got offices in Chicago and Rolling Meadows. And then DDS Match, how do they get best in touch with you, and how do they start that conversation? If they're looking at maybe 5 years out, or maybe they just, you know, inherited a bunch of money and are ready to buy something tomorrow, who knows?
Right. Yeah, with that, I'll say, Nick, you know, buyers are buying, sellers are selling, the banks are still lending. It's still a healthy environment out there. It's from coast to coast, I hear, and our founder loves to say that the buyers are buying and the sellers are selling. And so at DDS Match, we're available anytime to talk. We offer free consultative confidential calls to talk about your future plans, whether you're a buyer or a seller or somebody that's looking for a new associate role out there.
Right.
And they can reach me directly at my cell phone number. They can call 630-390-5135. And if it's not in my area, I'll get them to the right professional at DDS Match in their location. And they can certainly email me at rplamann@ddsmatch.com. That's my first initial and last name. Or you can look us up at our website. We've got a very intuitive website. I think everybody would enjoy checking it out if they haven't already. And that's ddsmatch.com. And, yeah, it's been a pleasure, Nick. I really appreciate this.
Very good, yes. And DDS Match is a big place. I see that it seems like there's different locations and a whole bunch of people. It's not just you and a handful of folks. It's a legit operation.
No, one of the unique parts of DDS Match is that, you know, most of us worked together at that distributor for many years, so we have a great synergy. And we are the largest serving dentistry today from coast to coast, which I'm really proud of that.
Very cool. All right, well, I always like talking about these types of things because there's just, you know, when it comes to issue spotting, there's a lot there and there's a lot to unpack and there's also a lot to make people kind of relax and feel like this is a very doable thing. So, all right, Rex, well, I appreciate your time. I hope people get in touch with you. And again, anyone needing legal help in a general practice firm from healthcare, also personal injury and all the other things that happen to people and walking around the world. Michael E. Fabian Associates, 312-609-6666. Again, if anyone finds these podcasts on our social media channels as you put out, please do hit the like button and the share button, because you just never know who's looking for exactly this kind of information. So again, I want to thank my guest, Rex Plowman, today from DDF Match in Chicago, and thank you all for listening. This has been Nick Augustine for the Fabia Law Firm and on our Blog Talk Radio podcast, Healthcare Practice Associates. Thank you all, and have a great day.